Mr. James, Ms. Frost?
Hello, Eric.
Yeah, I know, you're too, though.
And we heard her, but... Okay. The room is empty. Just got Mr. Stoll here.
He's on the same thing.
He's writing a book about, he's writing a book.
What just transpired?
Everything that happens here. All right, so let's go back to our investigative reviews.
This one, if it's 82, I do need to file a complaint.
For what now? We need a phone call?
Yeah. Is this not 82?
Is it 82?
82.
Oh, 82, so, thank you.
All right, so we're gonna get the... Responded on the phone line.
Complaining.
Complaining? 82? I don't have the...
Do we need the word 82? Oh, I put DVN, that's not...
Okay. He's trying to mess with me.
Hello?
Tommy?
Yes.
Hi, it's Tracy at the Veterinary Board, I'm gonna conference you into the meeting, okay?
All right, thank you so much, Tracy.
You're welcome.
Okay, we are on case number 2182. Tracy, would you read the summary, please?
Yes, case 2182, the complainant is Karen Dominique Wharton, the respondent is Ella Swenson, DVM. On January 4th, 2021, Henry, a four-year-old male pit bull, was presented to respondent due to an acute onset of lameness and swelling of the left rear leg. The dog was examined, radiographs were performed, and respondent suspected a cranial cruciate rupture. Options of surgical intervention and medical management were discussed. Complainant elected medical management and would return if the dog worsened. The dog was discharged with carbapenem and gabapentin. On January 7th, 2021, the dog was seen by respondent's associate due to the dog's worsening condition. Hospitalization was recommended or referral to a specialist. Complainant elected to take the dog to a specialty facility. On arrival, emergency treatment was initiated, but the dog went into cardiac arrest shortly after arrival. CPR was performed without success. And the committee concluded that no violation of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board dismissed this issue with no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay, we have no respondent. Mr. Stoll, monitoring?
Yes, sir.
And we have complainant on the phone. Did you care to address the board?
Yes, I would, and thank you so much.
Please state your name for the record first, please. And I can give it to five minutes to address.
My name is Dominique Wharton.
Thank you.
I'm Henry's mom. So I would just like to spend a moment just telling you just a little bit about Henry. He's very emotional for me, we love this dog so much. We adopted Henry about 4.5 years ago as a puppy from a shelter just outside of Bar Harbor, Maine, where we live. We did not know that he was a pit bull, we knew he was some kind of terrier. And then it came to light pretty quickly, you know, what his breed was. And unfortunately, a lot of our friends told us, you have to take this dog back. These are not good dogs, you know, go get yourself a Labrador or something. So we talked about it, we made a commitment, and Henry stayed with us. And we're so thankful that we did that. This dog was the most loving, wonderful dog that we've ever had. Jesus was beautiful on the inside and out, and he was a lot of things, but he certainly was not aggressive or ugly, you know, like you see in the stories in the media. So really the gift that Henry gave to us was really overcoming a lot of bias of this breed. I'm so thankful that I had that experience with him, because even this friends that had told us to take him back. You know, everyone sort of come around, and this is a really quite beautiful dog. You know, if they're treated properly, he was so loving and so wonderful, and we miss him so much. As far as what happened at Death Mountain, you know, I actually do not think it's that complicated of a case. My gut feeling about all this is that Dr. Fletcher misdiagnosed him on Monday, and the urgent care physician on Thursday, Dr. Jessica Bergstrom, this is exactly what she said to us, and she came out, you know, when she could not save him, she said to us, her words to us were, "I think the mountain misdiagnosed him. There was something going on with that leg." And his leg literally looked like a balloon, you know, on that last day of his life, Thursday. And we tend to agree with that. And so I really don't understand on Monday, when Dr. Swenson saw him, why she didn't do a blood test. I mean, you know, why not do one? It would have taken a couple minutes. And I think that probably showed us that something else was going on. I think it was more like a quicker diagnosis. She told me this breed of dog, you know, very prone to that. And even she said to me on the phone that day, you know, that his leg was unusually swollen. You know, she was concerned about that. And I described, you know, this big acre fence yard we had that was Arizona native, and he'd gone out there for 5 minutes and come in with his limp. And it just seems to me that that would have spurred a little bit more curiosity, you know, to dig into it a little bit deeper. This case, I grew some arms, you know, because of this Wednesday when I called them to tell them that he was really crashing down and could we please bring him in. And the yard was told they were too busy, and, you know, the vet would call me and all that just went into disaster. So there's no question on Wednesday was really the turning point for Henry. Whatever mistake was made on Monday, I think maybe we could have pulled back from that because he was such a young, strong dog. But we lost that opportunity. And then Thursday, of course, we called, when he was in a different place Thursday completely, of course he died Thursday. I called them out and they said they would see him. And this is where the other arm came, with this Carperson being the culprit, you know, for taking him down. And it was Dr. Madison Horton who saw him Thursday at Dove Mountain. And that's when that seemed to, you know, sort of come to life. Because she was the one that said, you know, he's critical, you need to get him to urgent care. She made all those, she was very good, and she made all the arrangements for us and told us where to go. But she said, "I think the Carperson, you know, is taking him down. I think that's what's doing it to him." So, of course, when Dr. Bergstrom couldn't save him, that's the first thing I said to her. "Oh, is it the pain pills that killed him? Is that what did it?" So she's like, "Well, you know, it could have been," but her body language, you know, she was like shaking her head, "No." You know, and she's like, "I think they made a mistake. You know, I think there was something going on with that leg." So that is really sort of how this whole thing happened. I just, you know, and I'm sorry I have to tell you this whole story because I'm going to have to interject a comment here about, you know, Dr. Crisford on this committee hearing I had about a month ago where I felt like I really should have had the opportunity to address a lot of these really critical facts that happened. You know, with the Carpenter, like Henry's had that before. His vet here in Blue Hill, his name goes vet in Blue Hill, Maine. You know, they pulled the records from me again. You know, he had Carpenter twice before, at least 100 milligrams, the same dosage, tolerated it fine. Why would he be fine taking it in Maine, but he takes it in Arizona and it potentially kills him? But it's just, it's not logical. So if they gave him Carpenter for an ACL tear, you know, and it probably wasn't an ACL tear, because he's not just going to die of an ACL tear. So again, we think if there's been a blood test on Monday, probably would have uncovered some other mechanisms going on, you know, some sort of toxin maybe in the gut system. Dr. Crisberg, at this committee hearing, I am very sorry to have to say, that was probably one of the most unpleasant experiences I've ever had. That gentleman was so aggressive and so rude to me. Everybody else in that committee was very professional. They asked me very reasonable questions in a very calm way. For whatever reason, with Dr. Crisberg, this whole thing seemed to be very personal. He came out of the bullpen at me, in particular with this phone call that I made to the office on Wednesday about Henry going down. He just hit you know, like rhetorical questions, like, who was that that answered the phone? How do you know who she was? You know, what was her name? How do you know she gave the message to Dr. Swenson? Did you know Dr. Swenson was out of the office? There's no way I know the answer to those questions. Those are all rhetorical questions. So I just, you know, what was the reason for doing that to me? So for me, I just felt like this gentleman had already made up his mind. That was about belittling me, belittling my claim. You know, he had this thing all figured out. You know, he upset me so much that he just completely threw me off. You know, my thought process and really sort of logically and methodically, you know, like I can do today, sort of go through how we...
Excuse me, Ms. Warren, I need to interrupt here. We're well over the 5 minutes. Can you summarize?
I think I've really covered everything I need to say. I just think that gentleman, having a person like that is that aggressive towards people that have lost a dog that they love, I thought was highly inappropriate. And I thought if he really was interested in getting to the truth, he did not have to be that aggressive with me.
Thank you. And we have Dr. James, you're the lead.
Yeah, so we're gonna discuss case 2182. So this case, I mean, ultimately I think in looking back at what was done on that Monday visit before, certainly we would have wanted some additional diagnostics such as the blood work and things like that. But at the time that, you know, we were doing the evaluation and trying to make a diagnosis, I don't see that anything there indicated immediate need for that. They did the medication, they talked about getting a surgical referral. So I just kind of at that point in time didn't see that blood work would have been, I think it's something that is great to do. But I don't think it fell below the standard of care to not do it on a Monday. I think when, you know, we weren't seeing improvement here is when we kind of get into whether the right things were happening, right? So by the time there's this Wednesday call where, you know, we're still not seeing any improvement, in fact, things are seeming to get worse, then I think at that point in time, action should have been taken. But at that point in time, the veterinarian in question was not in the office. So, you know, does that fall in the practice or not? But I don't see where this veterinarian who initially was involved would have been held accountable to that. So, you know, in looking through it, I mean, I think this is a difficult case, and certainly blood work on Monday, you know, having known everything that has now happened, would have been helpful. I just don't necessarily know that I see where there was a violation by this doctor. Do any other comments from the group or anything that they you see differently?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question of staff. Who's the responsible veterinarian for the premises?
I love that. I'm not tracing those on
the reason I'm asking is because of the issue related to the reception staff and that the respondent is not responsible for the reception staff. Then my question would be, who is?
Right. It's Dove Mountain Animal Hospital. I'm not exactly
sure. Pardon?
It's Dove Mountain Animal Hospital. I have to look. It might take me a minute.
Okay. So.
I think the only thing I just wanted to note on this, yes, it's just a comment, not to rub salt in the wound of this owner, because this story just truly brought me to tears last night, but this is one of those instances where I would have really loved to have seen any necropsy done. I think it's, you know, it might have prevented us from being here. I don't know, but it's really too bad that...
There's never a guarantee with a necropsy.
True.
But
because
it never hurts.
So
right?
So
it never hurts to have it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that the report, the radiology report that said And yeah, it does look like there could be a cranio-cruciate ligament injury, but, you know, we should also consider these other things, such as the arthritis, the septic arthritis, and I feel like maybe once you got that report, that would have changed how the dog was handled, because maybe it wasn't just a cranio-cruciate simple rupture, because the dog wasn't, you know, responding to pain medication as we would expect. But Henry continued to get worse, and that's where I feel like things would have changed afterwards. It's just not, I don't see that where that's with this veterinarian.
So let me ask the veterinarians on the board, if you've done a blood test, would the venom or something, would that show up in the blood test?
Would what?
Venom, like rattlesnake bite.
You could do
it
like allergy for a
parasite. But a routine, you run the panel, would you find it, or you'd have to be looking for it?
I'd have to be looking for it.
But I would also say what I would have been thinking the blood work on Monday would have been for is to get a baseline liver values when you're starting carprofen. I would have, you know, maybe because of the swelling, do we have some kind of infection going on? But I also don't know that you would have thought that on day one. By the time you get the radiology report and they're talking about potentially something else, then I think blood work is certainly warranted and expected. But again, that just, you know, because of the timeline of this and the fact that the doctor wasn't there on the Wednesday, I just don't see how they would have been expected to do that.
All right, so we're having a lot of discussion with no motion on the floor yet.
Just to answer your question, Dr. Beth Wiggy Newman is the responsible veterinarian for Doug Mountain. Wiggy Newman? Beth Wiggy Newman?
Thank you.
So I guess I'll make a motion in the case of 2182 with Dr. Swenson that we put forward the investigative committee's findings of no violations of our practice act and rules. I think this is a really, really tough case, and I think we could have done some things differently, but just not with this specific veterinarian.
Yeah, I second that.
Yeah,
it's just a sad case.
All right, we have a motion on the floor. Any second? Any further discussion? So I guess I didn't really think about it as reading over the case and keeping my notes, but hearing the discussion today, or hearing the complaints talking today, how hard would it be to see a puncture wound if you weren't looking for it? It's already starting to swell up, and you're looking for a limp, and you're looking for, I don't know, could a snake bite have been missed? If it was small enough, could the dog live? Because that would certainly explain the swelling. I'm a lay person.
Yeah, I should be guessing good stuff. I've seen snake bites on horses where you don't really see a definitive two holes right next to each other. That's the people have seen the horse get bit. So
yeah.
It all depends on to get one fang, two fangs. And it's pretty variable. Probably pretty common not to be classically obvious.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, I keep throwing these wrinkles in. Yes. I'm curious. All right, motion on the floor is to dismiss 2182. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to open a case against the responsible veterinarian.
Or?
Due to problems with reception staff, which fall under the responsibility of responsible veterinarian.
We have a motion on the floor.
I see where you're going with it. I'm just not quite sure, though, that I'm there as far as believing that all of the pieces that, you know, that they really didn't tell the vet or that it was solely the receptionist. And I feel like even if they did make that error, I don't know that I'm quite on board with holding. I understand that the responsible vet, you know, is responsible for something like that. I don't know if I'm there.
I'm just trying to, it's a prevention issue as far as it happening again. It's alleged that it was, I believe it said, and they've made changes. What were they? How has the staff been trained? I have a lot of follow-up questions.
Right.
So as part of this, I mean, I think one thing we can consider, even though Dr. Swanson isn't the responsible vet, that we send a letter of concern about the follow-up and ensuring that the practice that she's working in has a process for handling cases when she's not in the office, effective communication, things like that, that, you know, she may want to consider reviewing the policies with the responsible veterinarian to make sure that the doctors and the patients that are coming to this hospital are protected.
The chair is going to second the following motion. I do that, right?
Yes, you can.
So the motion on the floor is to open a case against the responsible veterinarian. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nay.
Nay.
Opposed? I would say the nays have it. The chair would entertain the motion for the letter of concern.
So I will add to my, or amend my initial motion with no violations.
We've already passed that, and you don't need that for the letter of concern.
No, we do, actually.
You do?
Yeah, if you're going to change your mind, because you've already dismissed this case.
Yeah.
So what
the letter of concern isn't totally separate?
No. Well, okay. What I would propose is that we entertain a motion, Dr. James, rescinding your prior motion, and then just doing a redo motion.
So I'll make a motion to rescind the initial motion of no violation.
And I second that.
Okay, motion on the floor and a second to rescind. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes.
Thank you.
Then I'll make a motion in the case of 2182 to find no violations, although submit a letter of concern to the veterinarian regarding the communication between reception staff and veterinary staff in the practice and ensuring that when a veterinarian is not available, that those that communication gets still getting answered. And it may be something that she wants to pick up with the responsible veterinarian to make sure that their practices are solid and that communication isn't causing an issue in this practice.
Motion on the floor.
Second.
And a second. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I have a legal question of counsel. Can a veterinarian in a practice that's under a responsible veterinarian be held responsible for policies of the practice?
That's not as easy as a yes or no. I would want to take a look at it. You know, the case in particular to see where the responsibilities would fall.
So at this point,
well, a letter of concern is non-disciplinary, correct?
Yes, it is. And I think what you're doing here is more of a best practice.
Yes.
Type of, you know, that in this particular case, under these facts, we're not holding you responsible for engaging in unprofessional conduct. But please be careful moving forward, and this is, you know, in order to avoid a similar situation, you may want to have this type of discussion with your responsible veterinarian.
Can we copy the responsible veterinarian on that letter?
I don't know, sir. I get what your point is, but as Mr. Harris said, it's always case by case. But as a general rule, it's the veterinarian's license, so it's the veterinarian's job to protect their own license. And if that means telling whoever you're working for that, no, I won't be that, or no, I can't be that, then it's your license, it's your responsibility to get that done.
Again, I'm speaking from a preventative in the future, hoping this problem won't reoccur.
Yeah.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, so motion on the floor, and a second, right? We have a second for the letter of concern? Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. We should let her answer. Case is dismissed with a letter of concern. All right, we have two.
Mr. Lohia, I think there's one IR that we need to do someone on the phone. Is that right?
Yes, there's one person who is waiting to be called.
Okay. Let's get that one, then we'll get our two guests that are here. We are, next up, the case 2192.
Dominique, if you're still on the line, you're more than welcome to reconnect or stay on if you'd like to listen.
If my case is over, is that correct?
Yes, it is. They voted to issue a letter of concern.
Then I just want to extend a thank you for that. That his life is just not completely in vain. And maybe they will make some changes there. So thank you very, very much for that.
You're welcome. Sorry you just made a loss.
All right, goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye.
Discussing action on information presented. Dr. Ford? Thank you for making the trip down the hill.
Thank you.
How was traffic?
It wasn't terrible.
Yeah? Okay.
How's the weather up there?
Beautiful.
Yeah. Have you guys been getting as much rain as we have down here?
I think so, yeah.
I was up there last month during the board meeting, and it was rain every day, and it was in the 60s. It was delightful. Yes. Well, again, thank you, as always, for making, you know, the long drive down just to merely sit here and answer what is usually the same question that I ask you every time. How are things going?
Going very well.
Good. What are you doing to stay busy these days?
More work. Just keeping me busy. Basically, work, family.
Okay.
Housework, yard work. I got a lot of weeds going right now. I got 4 acres
Don't
of weeds.
Don't we all? So. Oh, really? Yikes. What are you doing? I mean, it sounds like maybe yard work is a stress reliever, but do you have any like specific stress relievers that are?
I've been getting on a couple of camping trips. I took my daughter a 2-week road trip mid to end June. We went like Tahoe, Northern California. It's always stressful coming back, have a relief vet there for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
I'm still sifting through whatever happened while I was gone, but it was great. I'm trying to make it a annual thing.
Okay, and your staffing levels at your practice are good?
I don't think so, but it's always a challenge, yeah.
Okay, but I guess if you got to get away for 2 weeks, then
yeah,
you were able to find some in there, so that's good. Well, does anybody else have any other fun questions for Dr. Ford?
I agree, Tahoe's a great place for that. I used to spend a lot of winter hours on this place.
Victoria, how we continue to see him on a quarterly basis for a while still?
Yeah.
Okay. losing track of how long we've been seeing you.
Almost a year now.
Okay, well, good. Well, it looks like you're doing well, and I'm glad to see that. So again, I appreciate that you come all the way down. We'll drive here and back, but unless anybody else has any other questions.
I guess I just say that you're looking good.
Yes.
And improving over one the first time we saw you.
Right.
So that's good to see.
Please keep up the great work.
All right, will you take care?
All right.
We'll see you again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Bye-bye.
Okay, next up, same section, number five, number two. Case 2166, regards to Tressa McLennan, DBM. Quarterly appearance is required by consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, take action on information presented. Good morning.
Morning.
Please state your name for the record.
I'm Tressa McLennan.
Thank you. And Ms. Solomon, you are the lead.
Good morning, Dr. McLennan. Can you give us an update on how things are going and before I start asking questions?
I mean, I think recovery is going great. You know, initially it's difficult, and then once you get into more healthy behaviors and thought patterns, it's a lot better. I mean, like, I look forward to going to work and been jogging more, and just taking care of myself better, and connecting with my spouse better too. So, you know, we like to golf, we've been golfing, and so that aspect has been really good too. So, yeah.
And work-wise?
Work's good. Yeah, every day is different. Of course, there's going to be challenges. There's always staffing challenges, just interpersonal stuff. But like, I just feel like I deal with things better. I deal with conflict better. It's just, okay, something doesn't seem right. They're not acting right. We'll just ask them, like, what's the big deal? So, but, yeah, it's not perfect, of course, but there's improvements.
Yes, definitely sounds like progress.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your 6 months.
Thank you.
And I have a question of staff regarding the UAs through PAP. There was a big break in the time, which made me a little uncomfortable, which there were no UAs done between like the beginning of June and the end of July. That's when the last ones two were done, was beginning of June and the end of July. So are they on it? I'm not familiar with their schedule and when they do random and.
For us, she's just required to be monthly.
Correct. So can permission to speak?
Okay.
So I've had 19 urine samples since the end of January. So I do 3 a month. The problem has been with the PAPA program and getting those urine test results to Victoria more quickly. And I have contacted Kelly, who is the head of PAPA, regarding this concern. And so, yeah, I feel like I've taken steps. I just, I can't control everything, obviously. So, but yeah, I keep track. I have the forms. I mean, there has been 19 since beginning of January. There's 3 a month in this program.
Okay, great. So they'll be playing catch up. Are those tests, were there actually tests done? We just don't have the results?
I believe there would have been tests done, right? You're getting tested 3 times a month.
Correct.
So if, I don't know if you remember, we had amended the consent agreement so that PAPA could just give them to us once a month.
Okay.
And except if there's a positive hit, then they have to do it within so many days. But even at the once a month hit, they're being slow with that.
Yes.
Dr. McLennan every time has needed to remind her. So Dr. McLennan is on top of it. It's just PAPA.
Exactly. It's not an issue with you. It's the PAPA.
Correct.
Well, thank you, Dr. McLennan. Again, recovery during a pandemic is exceptionally challenging according to all the mental health experts. Relapse rates have gone up significantly because of the stresses. And I want to commend you on your progress. The first steps are often the toughest, but they're the most rewarding.
Can permission to speak again?
Absolutely.
So I do have one request, and primarily, I know that the veterinary board, their job is to protect the public primarily. My concern is that there has been a day where the other veterinarian did not show up, and so I did not have someone there, so we had to reschedule everything on a full schedule. So my request is that the direct supervision be changed to indirect supervision for these purposes. I feel like I'm doing everything that I can as far as what I'm supposed to do. I haven't, yeah, anyways, that just a request that I'm making. It was a very difficult day, so I just couldn't see a patient.
Is there another way to accommodate that, Victoria, without removing direct supervision and, you know, indirect in cases of emergency or that kind of thing, as opposed to completely lifting direct supervision? Because we're early on in the process here.
I think so. I'm actually looking at the consent agreement because I don't remember the language. And Mark would like to look at that too. Tracy may need to help Mark find that.
It's 9C in the consent.
So I'll just read it for everyone's convenience. So 9C is for at least the first 12 months of veterinary practice while subject to the consent agreement until receiving written approval from the board or its designee, respondent shall practice only under the direct supervision of a licensed veterinarian in good standing with the board. Direct supervision is defined as having a veterinarian present in the same office with the respondent whenever respondent is practicing as a veterinarian or working at a veterinary clinic or facility. This is for the first 12 months, and the consent agreement, this was May of 2021, that's the amended one.
So we're not at the 1 year mark yet, are we?
Dr. McLean, you probably remember.
We're at 6 months. I started February 18th.
Okay, so we're not here yet.
If there are other options we can consider, Mr. Chairman, I'm open to considering them, but at this point, I'm not comfortable completely lifting the direct supervision requirement until after the first 12 months.
I guess I just add in there that something for the doctor to consider is it's not, I mean, there's a reason to say 12 months, right? Because there's certain milestones that you hit. We're not the experts, but that's what the experts tell us.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
We try to keep those things in there. And though I realize that stress or inconvenience of rescheduling when that kind of thing happens, but also if the person wasn't there, how much stress is there when there should be two of you when there's only one of you? So, I mean, I think it's going to be a stress either way. And I think what we're trying to avoid, like the plague, is any unneeded stress that we don't have to have. So, it's a template, it's worked well, so we're not jumping at the chance to change. That doesn't mean you shouldn't ask.
Right.
You did. It sounds like it's not going to happen today. But that doesn't mean you don't ask again. And
yeah.
Certainly at 1 year.
Yes, I agree.
But you might ask every quarter or every month about it. and we'll see how it goes. But I'd have that discussion with whoever else is in the office. Hey, you can't leave me hanging.
Yes, yes. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to add, the process we use as far as recovery and monitoring is pretty much a national model, and it has a very high success rate when fully implemented. So we want to try and ensure your full recovery. That's the reason.
Okay. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here today. Safe travels.
Yes.
We need to take a break before we go to our informal. Right?